Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. But if this is the first time you've joined our podcast, you're very welcome. Check out more at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. Of course, if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, and give the discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking in depth to one such hero, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit about what's made them who they are today. I'm delighted to be joined today by the Managing Director of Earnest, Chris Wilson. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Dave. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing from you. So I can see you and you can see me because we're recording this over Zoom. But for the benefit of our listeners, where do we find you today?
We find me in, I guess, where I've been on and off for the last nearly 2 years, which is in my little room at home, a few miles outside of London. And we still have an office, but it gets very rarely frequented at the moment. So here I am. I'm in the UK, a few miles south of London.
And it's all of that kind of, you kind of infer, really, it's kind of COVID enforced. So
yes.
It's kind of a result of government regulations and wanting to look after health and well-being rather than necessarily your natural state.
100%. Yeah, I'm not a natural home worker. And one of the, I guess, really delightful things about all this period of change that we've gone through is that some people have found themselves to be great at home working and then suddenly kind of now realize why they often challenged and found it hard to concentrate in the office environment. Mm-hmm. So some people have really found their feet in this sort of period that we've been through. Personally, I'm working from home, but I love getting into the office. I love seeing people, speaking to people, and everyone has got sort of different paths and work patterns that they use at the moment. And obviously, under our government's current guidelines, I'm firmly at home.
There's a lot of talk about, you know, their 2020 being something of a kind of revelation for people as to all of the benefits of working from home. But now we're getting something of a kind of pullback, and people are beginning to focus more on the inefficiencies of working from home. Where do you sit on that?
I think it's going to be a debate that will rumble along for quite some time. My personal view on it is that there are a number of different vectors to think about, and it's very easy to get binary on this sort of stuff. So the different vectors for me are personality type. Some people, and there's a lot written about introverts, extroverts, omniverts, which is the sort of bit that's slightly in between. And people work differently according to their personalities, and there's an effort to try and work that out. The other one is job role. There are certain job roles that, you know, are massively better suited to being in, you know, an office environment. And there are some where the opposite is true. You know, if I take a good example of some of our fantastic writers, they don't like being in the office sometimes because there's so much noise going on. And so they flourish when they're at home, which is lovely to see. And then the other one is the task at hand. So not the job role per se, but what you're actually doing in any given day and things like that. And, you know, as an extreme example, I think if you've got 8 Zoom calls to do on a particular day, regardless of what your job is, why are you going into an office to do that? That seems completely ludicrous. But I think we do need to think about those tasks, those roles and personality. And when you start blending that together, you see that you do need mixes of both, but it's not something that I think can be fixed by some quite blunt approaches that I've seen where people say, well, you must be in for 2 days a week. And for me, that makes no sense at all, because that's not taking into account those different vectors. And to get it right is hard, because it's very easy to go, let's do 2 days or whatever it is. But I don't think that's sufficient. And I also, to your point, I also don't think that everybody not ever in the office is efficient either. I think you missed something there. But the way forward is to think about those three different vectors, those three different aspects of human beings, really, and how we work.
And so the days where you've got back-to-back Zoom calls aside, where do those natural vectors leave you? So if I were to magic COVID out of the ether, such that it was fine to be able to go back, what's the Chris Wilson way of doing work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would be in work more than I would be at home, but I wouldn't be 5 days a week. I guess there's actually another aspect, which I didn't really mention it, which is also, what is your actual physical environment like? I'm lucky, I've got a little room. I have two wonderful, exuberant children as well. So that means there is some levels of disruption there as well. And sometimes I think it is actually almost helpful for the barrier of work and non-work to be there. So I would want to be, whether it's 2, 3, 4 days a week, depending on, again, the task, I would absolutely be in the office. I also think my role means I should be communicating and working with and helping and supporting as much of my team as I can. I can certainly do a lot of that over Zoom, but there's many occasions where getting people in the room, I can do that even more effectively. So I would definitely be more in the office than not, but I would not be 5 days. I have a commute that I don't miss. And so it's bringing a little bit of that back is kind of nice as well.
Cool. So let's come on to your role then. So you're managing director of Earnest. So first of all, what does Earnest do?
Okay. So Earnest is a B2B creative agency. I started Earnest in 2009 with two others. I was the traditional suit, I guess, the account man, the client services person. And I found two incredible people that I was very privileged to meet and work with. Paul Hewardine, who is the clever one, he's our strategy partner, and Matt Frost, who is the creative one, and he's our creative partner. And that is the sort of classic triangle of skills and experiences and things that you needed. And when the three of us came together, we felt that, yeah, we have something here. We've got an interesting way that we work together and think alike and all that sort of stuff. And so that's sort of, was the setup of Earnest. That was sort of the main thing that kind of got us going. And there was a lot of other things that really drove us. And this sort of, for me, is much bigger than Earnest. I felt very, very strongly at the time, prior to Earnest. I was in a huge agency, over 700 people. And B2B was seen as a poor cousin. And I still talk about this today. It was seen as a poor cousin. But our bit, the B2B bit that I was running, was doing really well. And we were doing really interesting work, working with fascinating clients that were maybe behind the scenes, but they were brilliant businesses. Mm. And we were absolutely loving what we were doing. And we couldn't really sort of understand why other people didn't quite get that. It sort of just, I think it started something in me. It really started a sort of burning desire, or even, I guess, anger, actually, that, you know, we need to prove to the world that B2B is absolutely bloody amazing. And we were seeing it in our little world, and we felt that that wasn't just us. And it was proved to be true, because it turns out a lot of our clients were saying exactly the same thing and having exactly the same experiences and frustrations. The foundational and formative example, and I'll keep their name out of it, which I think is only fair, but an amazing company we still work with today, a telecommunications company, who'd historically made all their money from consumers. But that business had changed, and we met the B2B team, and they were amazing, really good, commercially astute marketeers. They knew that they were bringing over a third of the profit into that business, despite the consumer business spending all the money and being on telly and all that sort of stuff. And we thought, one, what an amazing team. That's brilliant. We'd love to work with people like that. And two, that is tragic that they are seen as the 4,000 internally, and we need to change that. The whole world needs to change that. Mm-hmm. And so it really got us going, and that's one of the things that really set us off on the path to set up Earnest, because we just, and to this day, we feel the same. You know, B2B is a brilliant discipline. We meet some amazing people in B2B, and we should raise the flag and fight for that.
So the sentiment is the same, but you talked about anger back in 2009.
Yes, I'm probably less angry these days.
I was going to say, well, is that anger still there? Do you think that your view has held true, but do you think the world has changed around you? Is it still so much of a fight here in 2022?
You're dead right, and I am happily less angry, and it's good at my age not to be quite so angry. I think so. Yes, it's definitely changed, and I think there's two changes that's happened. One that's been kind of invisible, and one that I think has been really quite visible. I think first one has just been a natural evolution that we've seen since we started in 2009. Lots more good people coming into the industry, and lots of great competition that we did not have in 2009. When we came into the market then, our competition I could sort of count on one hand that I worried about. Now there's a hell of a lot more. So obviously that's brought a lot of good talent into the industry, both on the agency side and the client side. And the sophistication of the marketing has increased over time. But the second part of it has been the real radical acceleration of that. And that is actually COVID. Because what has happened is I think that B2B has fared very well as an industry during COVID. Not universally, of course. There's no universals at all. But we don't sell directly to consumers. And so we're often, as in B2B brands, part of the fabric of making things happen behind the scenes. And I've always loved that. But that stuff that we do hasn't gone away because of COVID, and in fact, just by the fact that things like the hospitality industry got hit and all these different other very consumer facing and often from a marketing perspective seen as glamorous industries got hit really hard. There's nothing nice about that, but at the same time we saw all of our clients really surge forward. The technology industries and telecommunications industry, professional services, so many of them really kind of came out from the shadows in a way. And I find that brilliant and quite inspiring. And I think the other part of the acceleration of COVID was, and I'm going to use a phrase I really hate actually, so I can only apologize for this because it's the awful terminology that consultants use, but there has been a genuine digital transformation going on, and it's been going on for ages. It didn't just happen during COVID, but suddenly the things that we as B2B marketeers have kind of known have been a bit rubbish and a bit annoying, but we've been forced to do, and I'm really talking about B2B trade shows here, and got stopped. And so guess what? A lot of that money then came back. Sometimes it just got removed, sadly, but sometimes it came back and got put into things like, that really tricky job that we haven't wanted to do for ages, that let's sort our website out so it's actually good for the customer and it's a good customer experience. So much of that happened from 2020 onwards. And so many examples I saw of that going on, and I think it's really elevated the B2B marketing profession. I think it's helped B2B marketing actually. And going
as a business marketer, so it's interesting the fact you talk about. You talk about this great influx of talent over the last 10 years, and you also talk about COVID effectively changing budgetary priorities. That gives a business marketer, therefore, an opportunity. Do you think we've run with that opportunity?
Largely, I think we have. I'll sort of come on to this a bit later, I guess. But I still think we've all got a long way to go still, definitely. I mean, and we can never say the job's done. But I saw so many great examples of B2B marketeers in different brands that we talk to and work with really step up and really gain far more attention internally for the right reasons. And one of those, because they suddenly became very, very close to customers. They were the ones doing all the sort of, post-COVID comms stuff. That was the kind of classic emergency response stuff that happened kind of March, April, 2020. And I think that it has really, really upped things. It's really kind of pushed the game up. I think one of the challenges, back to the trade show thing, which you know, I can't criticize too much because we used to help brands with trade shows. So that's, I'm being slightly disingenuous. But we've all known that the sheer amount of effort involved in that, to invite a bunch of slightly disinterested salespeople to stand around on the stand and just glare at potential customers. It's not a great use of our time. You know, we're strategic marketeers, and the budgetary shifts and the priorities have actually gone more to the strategic side rather than quite painful tactics, I think. So there has been a shift. Whether that will stay or not, I didn't know that. I don't know.
So you took us through the kind of transition point for you in terms of setting up Earnest. How about just before that? How did you get here? What are the key steps in your career journey? And particularly for our listeners, you know, things that they might want to be able to emulate that were kind of really valuable to you.
Great. Yeah. So if I go all the way back then, I think I always wanted to get into marketing. I liked, at least from a sort of my perception at the time as a sort of naive undergraduate, was that there's a brilliant mix of sort of rational business skills and things, but also with sort of a bit of creativity infused in. I thought that marketing would bring that together. And so that's sort of what got me looking at marketing. I looked everywhere. I started in a financial services organization, working in a sort of a very kind of low-level marketing role that was really kind of glorified admin, but it sort of, you've got to start somewhere, and I think that's where I started. Then I sort of almost accidentally ended up doing some work where there was an external partner involved, i.e. an agency, and I thought, oh, that looks quite interesting, and then sort of found my way over to agency side. So again, you know, it was fairly deliberate, but you know, never perfectly planned, because I'd love to say my career was perfectly planned. It definitely wasn't. The B2B side, which I know you and I've mentioned before, of, you know, the classic accidentally ended up in B2B. I, you know, of course I ticked that box. But I think it was very deliberate once I'd experienced marketing in general that B2B was really interesting. I was lucky enough to have stumbled into it, but really grabbed it when I first saw it, because it covered a lot of the problems that I was having in the consumer marketing side, which was that I felt it was just sort of, you know, focusing on one of the four P's, the promotional one, whereas I felt B2B marketing just had a lot more complexity to it. There was a lot more really understanding the business side. And in fact, I would say to this day, that is the single thing that if you love business and you want to go into marketing, B2B marketing is the winner of the two, because you just get closer to the business. You really understand how the business works, I think. And so that's kind of how I got into it in the first place. But I started off in a very, very small, brilliant, fun, but very chaotic agency. And it was very sort of entrepreneurially led, and you learn fast. You make so many mistakes, and we would need a whole other podcast for me to be able to cover the many mistakes that I made. But you do learn, and there wasn't, at the time, there wasn't a lot of, you know, strong line management. I don't mean that in a bad way necessarily, but it meant I had to kind of work a lot of stuff out myself. And then, of course, there were senior people there that I could learn from. But I guess the level of empowerment, or you could look at it the other way, the length of rope that they gave me to hang myself with was significant. And so, you know, I did learn fast. I failed fast, all that sort of stuff. And I think that stayed with me, that kind of attitude and you know, we need to try this. We'll learn by trying, almost. And so that's definitely got me into that. And I like the agency side, but what really triggered that bit for me was that going back to the business bit, is that suddenly I could not just learn about one business, but I could learn about quite a lot. And I love that as well, because then your scale of learning was completely, you know, uncapped. You know, there's so much you could do. So I started in a very tiny place, then ended up in a very, very big place. And then ultimately that, you know, then went the other way again, started Earnest when it was literally just the three of us. And then I guess we're not tiny, but we're not huge. We're somewhere in between now.
It's a great journey. And so that's the past. We've talked a bit about the present. So let's talk about the future. So you've painted this picture of a kind of well, you didn't use this word, but I'm going to give it to you, this a renaissance in business marketing that has been enabled in the last few years. Where does business marketing go next?
Yeah.
What should we be looking out for? What might be the hurdles that we would encounter?
Yeah, it's a really good topic, actually. So I think that this strategic, I do want to come back to that, because that battle will never be over. And so I almost put it at the top of the list. I think as B2B marketeers, we have to focus on the strategic side of what we do. We have to be very well indexed in the commercials of that business, because that's where value sits. And I think we need to be very careful about being a very tactically oriented function, because that could very quickly get commoditized. And I worry about that. There are plenty of large consultancies that are looking at the sort of outsourced marketing as a service model. And you know, I believe that we really don't want to end up like that. And so my first thing would be, you know, that strategy piece should be the number one thing for everyone. We should be still pushing really hard on that. You know, we're not just comms. We do a lot more than that as marketing. I've talked about this before, but I think we should start to take more ownership of some things that have historically kind of lived elsewhere. I think we should look at things like, you know, what are we selling? How do we price it? You know, what's the experience of the customer? You know, some of those things can live a bit outside of the marketing department, but I think they shouldn't. I think they should live inside. So I would say that's definitely something that should be the future. I mentioned the awful digital transformation piece, but I do think that we are also in a bit of an interesting time in that we've had the MarTech oversell for quite some time, haven't we? We've all been flogged stuff. And there's some wonderful stuff knocking around on the internet, which pokes a fun at some of those like false promises of, you know, the single customer view and all the other things that we've been promised for many years. And we all know it's not quite happened. But I do think we're in a bit of a normalizing state at the moment. I think that what I've seen certainly in the last, I'd say 3 or 4 years actually, is that the marketing teams that we work with are getting it much better in terms of the balance of what is the actual stack of stuff that we need technology-wise, and what do we not need, and how do we simplify that so that we're just focusing on things that add value to the business. And I think that's a definite thing where I think the pendulum swung back a while back, where we just had almost too much stuff and we felt like we were all spending a lot of time trying to glue bits and pieces together.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think there's we now know what we're doing. We can kind of remove the bits that we don't need and actually just have a nice, sensible, right-sized technology operational size. And marketing ops, I think, actually, in general, I think is going to get more cover, more emphasis, because the operational side of a marketing team is really critical, because you get that right. And then a lot of the other activities just gets greater efficiencies based on that. And I've seen more written about marketing ops actually in the last year or so. I would take the digital bit actually one step further, not for every B2B brand, but for many more than people would be comfortable with. And that's e-commerce. The e-commerce in B2B is double the size of B2C e-commerce, which is an astonishing statistic, because you just sort of think, well, it's all Amazon, isn't it, e-commerce? You know, and Mr. Bezos probably is quite happy with that perception. But there is a lot of B2B revenue that doesn't touch a human being. Now I'm not saying that is a good or a bad thing, but increasingly more things can be sold directly online in the B2B world that we live in. And I think embracing e-commerce where possible has got huge value. I've seen businesses go from having a very traditional direct sales model to having a hybrid model where they've got a web store and they've got salespeople, and those businesses growing amazingly, far more than they could have ever imagined previously. And I think that there is more that can be sold online than we imagine. A lot of businesses, their first objection would be, well, we can't sell that online, that's a complex buying cycle, etc., etc. Many, many years ago, at the time, a small company called HubSpot was told the same thing. And it was saying, you can't, it was $9,000 for a year at the time. And they're saying, well, you can't sell you know, this marketing technology for 9,000 year online. That's crazy. Yeah, that's very much been proved to be wrong. And they have a very good model for that. And I'm not saying you should all follow them, but I do think more B2B brands will go quite heavily into e-commerce. And then my last bit that in terms of the what's next, I'm going to sort of slightly go against the grain from what I think a lot of evangelist type of people say, where I'm hearing way too much about the metaverse at the moment, for example. And yeah, that's great. I mean, as long as it's not the Zuckerberg metaverse, I'm kind of okay with it in general. But as marketeers, we have always had a bit of a tendency to leap to the new shiny. And obviously, as an agency, unfortunately, we are sometimes proponents of that. We are often coming to the table with some new shiny for people. I mean, just for me, I think we've got to be quite cautious about some things, because is it what the customer actually wants? Is this right for our brand? And are we doing this for the right reasons? And I just think sometimes we sort of leap into things a bit too quickly. If I had to say one emerging priority for me, and this has been made worse by COVID 100%, but I don't think it was great beforehand. I think we all need to go and meet customers. And if we're in marketing, get on the road when we're allowed to get on the road, go and meet them. If you sell to CIOs, go and meet some, go and spend some time with them. And I think that this, for me, sometimes I get a bit spooked when I meet people who haven't done that, because I think if you haven't met the CIO customer, you're guessing what they're like. And I know meeting one doesn't mean you suddenly know CIOs in general, but you pick up so much from speaking to these people. Mm-hmm. And so I just think we're all very busy. How do we carve out the time to go and meet those customers? Do we go on a sales visit? I don't know what it needs to happen, but it's really, really needed, I'd say.
Hmm. There's some great stuff there, and don't get me started on the metaverse. Seeing before Christmas Nick Clegg in the metaverse environment talking about bombs dropping on Libya just kind of showed the most inappropriate use of channels to get across a serious
yes. thing
I can think of.
Indeed, I mean that business has lost any kind of moral compass many, many, many years ago, sadly. But that's probably correct. I'll probably get edited out, and I'm okay. Yeah,
we'll edit that one out, I'm sure. So there's some great stuff there and some great advice. Is there a piece of reading that you would recommend for our listeners to help them perhaps attune to the new world that you're painting?
Yes, I struggled with this a little bit, but then I ended up with three. So so you're going to have to bear with me on this. They have been definitely some of the most formative things that I've read. And I'll go through. The first one is a book called Decoded by Phil Barton. Now, Phil's an ex-CMO and very privileged to very, very, very briefly met him. Really good guy. And it got me into behavioral economics. It got me into really understanding how people's brains actually work in reality, as opposed to when you used to go into a focus group and listen to what people said they thought you wanted them to say. You know, so it's completely false. Proper revelationary stuff. And this goes back nearly 10 years when I read that book, and it completely, genuinely changed my life and how I think about so much stuff. The next one, which is far more recent, is a wonderfully titled book called Don't Think of an Elephant, and it's by George Lakoff. He's an American political writer, really, and he talks about frames of reference and how you need to frame what you're trying to do. And he talks about it purely and really in political terms, and it's very interesting if you're into politics, especially US politics, although it very much applies to our current political mess over here. But what it makes you realize is that the use of language and how you use language is incredibly powerful. And you know, the title of the book's quite leading in that, you know, don't think of an elephant. Obviously, what you do is you think of the elephant. But actually, when you're starting to talk about something you need to communicate to prospects, and you're in your marketing job, you have to get your frame of reference right for people to buy something. And it's very easy to think about it from your point of view and what you're trying to sell, as opposed to what goals they are trying to achieve. It's again quite revelationary in terms of a real frame of reference thinking. It's great. And then the third one, which has almost got nothing to do with marketing, that it was actually quite, I wouldn't say fortunate, because it didn't really necessarily save anything or anything, but I read this just before the pandemic happened, and then it became one of the most amazing books to interpret the pandemic, actually. And it's called Factfulness, quite hard to say, by Hans Rosling. And there's plenty of videos of him as well. He's a genuine genius, and he actually passed away a few years ago. But he's an expert at two things: data and the visualization of data. And so what he does, as a statistician, which is again very hard word to say, is he looks at a set of things going on, like a public discourse about something, and then he looks at the actual data that sits behind that, and then he presents that in a series of charts and graphs that kind of makes sense to you. And as it started, his book really started out from a view that he was hearing around the world, which I think we'd all have a lot of empathy for at the time, that yeah, oh God, the world's just getting worse and worse. God, things are getting worse, you know. Oh, there's more crime, there's more, you know, all these different things. And he looked at that at the time and just cracked that open and said, actually, no, I've got some data to show you. All of these things are slowly getting better. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, there was a little section that talked about the fact that we haven't had pandemics for many years, and then the pandemic happened. So it just shows you get some statistical anomalies sometimes. But what it's made me really love is data and looking at it and thinking about it, not just in isolation, but in proportion, in context. And when you can look at some really scary statistics out there, and it's very easy to get scared. And without getting all political, the media does well when it inspires some negative emotions, sadly. We know that from research. But actually, when you look at data and you just uncover it and you think about it and you look at it contextually, it changes your way of looking at things. And so Factfulness, I think, in addition to just making you feel better about the world, and also makes you take a little extra look a bit harder at it.
And Rosling's done some quite inspiring TED Talks as well that are worth looking up as well. That's some great picks there. Thank you very much for that. I'll definitely let through the non-marketing book just this once.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah,
so if people want to find out more about Earnest, Chris, what should they do?
Well, they can obviously get hold of me, or they can just literally Google us. If you Google Earnest Agency, you'll find us. Thank you to Google, or rather thank you to the marketing team for making that actually work. Earnest-agency.com. You can learn all about us, see the stuff that we've done, and all of that.
Chris Wilson, it's been great having a chat.
It's been fantastic, and it's been too long. So yeah, no, this has been absolutely lovely for me. Thank you.
All the best. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Dave.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Chris Wilson. And thanks to our technical man from Through the Eye, Andrew Gratian. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.